Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. You are in for a treat today. I think this is Stephen's second time on the podcast. Stephen Brewster's with us today. Stephen is one of these guys that... He reached out and said, hey, I'd love to be on the podcast. And I absolutely would say yes, because he's really creative. He's a leader that I want to make sure that more leaders who are listening in are leaning in and following and getting a chance to follow through him. And I just know it's going to be a high-value experience. And so I'm so glad you're on the show today, Stephen. Thanks for being here.
Oh, my gosh. Rich, it's an honor to be here. And I got to be honest with you. You're the only person I've ever reached out to and asked to be on the podcast. Nice. I've never done that before, and so I leaned into all of my insecurities to do it. So.
No, I'm glad you did. It's funny, because I've done more of that this year, too. I've never reached out to anybody, so I asked a couple, and I don't know, it's so funny, the stuff that goes on inside your head, because I'm like, oh, these guys are going to say no, they're going to say no, and people are like, no, I'll have you on it, so... But anyway, so glad to have you here, Stephen. I really appreciate everything that you're doing. Why don't you give kind of the Stephen summary? Give us a sense of kind of your background, some of the things. You've done a lot of different things, which I think is great. Maybe give us a sense of that, and then I think that'll lead into what we're talking about today.
Yeah, sounds great. So I'm a gypsy.
Nice.
But kind of maybe a little. So mm-hmm. My parents were missionaries. I grew up all over the world. Born in London, Ontario, Canada. So
nice.
I'm a fellow Canuck. But I will say that Nashville is home, and so yes. Go Preds. Let's. I want to see the
this
Preds.
This is the year. This is the year.
They need to be there. Yeah. Okay. So grew up in born in Canada. Moved to Haiti when I was like kindergarten, first grade. Spent a ton of time in Haiti. Moved from Haiti to Singapore, which is the ultimate culture shock of all time.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was nuts. I think my parents were like destining me for therapy at that point. And then moved from Singapore to Florida, because my dad was kind of like his ministry was around the world at that point. And so we based near my grandparents and high school in Florida, and then off to college, all over the place, 6 different colleges, like any good student does. And then my senior year, I dropped out of college with 1 semester to go and moved to Nashville, Tennessee to chase the music dreams, because
nice.
That's exactly how my parents had always dreamt that this would go. And I was blessed, man. God really opened some doors. I moved to Nashville because I wanted to be the Christian P. Diddy. Like, that was, honest
nice.
To God, my goal.
Nice.
And God opened doors, and I got to have a really, really fun career in the music business. But always loved the local church, always have had a passion for the local church. My wife has always been involved in the local church. And so we ended up working at a church in Nashville for a long time, and it was super awesome. And recently, the last couple of years, we kind of bounced around through some transitions, but headed home to Nashville again very, very soon. By this summer, we'll be back home in Nashville.
Great.
And looking for our next fun opportunity.
Nice.
So that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, that's great. And one of the things I've always appreciated about your leadership from afar, I'm definitely a fan from afar, is you seem to speak with clarity around creativity. And like I say, you and I share a similar heartbeat for wanting to serve the local church. And so I'm excited for this conversation. Now, one of the things, you and I had kind of a sidebar, quick conversation around transitions. And it seems like, it seems like people are either in the midst of a transition, they're just about to go into a transition, they're coming out of a transition. That is kind of just normal life now. That is kind of, it seems like where people are at. And you had some fascinating thoughts that I'd love to dig into that. When you think about transition, how should we be thinking about either helping people in our organizations or ourselves if we're thinking about a transition? What should we be thinking about on that front?
Yeah, so great question. And first off, I completely agree. People are either about to go into transition, coming out of transition, or in the middle of it. And whether it's them or someone in their ecosystem or in their organization, transition affects all of us. And in the church world, we sometimes miss the weight of what a transition really means. Because when I worked at a record label, right, and I transitioned from one record label to another, all I did was pick up my stuff and move it from one office to another. I didn't pick up my pastor and my small group and my local community and the people I serve with and my and all my friends in my small group and cut those people off to go to this other job. However, whenever someone transitions in a church, all of those factors are impacted in their life. For their kids, for their spouse, their partner, whatever the situation is, they get put in a spot that is like It's almost, there's some trauma that's attached to it, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so I am very passionate about having walked through a very traumatic couple of years mm-hmm. With my family. I'm very passionate about helping people make that transition easier for themselves.
Yeah. You know, I moved from, so I'm Canadian. We talked about that earlier. I was living north of Toronto and moved from there, to New Jersey. And I can say, having lived through that transition, it took me a couple of years to realize how big of a transition it was. You know, it took me, you know, probably 2 years to realize, wow, this is a real deal. And this is, you know, it's a significant piece of the puzzle and is hard. And, you know, for us, I know for us in our world, you know, I had my new job, I had the new thing I was doing. But then, you know, my wife and our kids, they kind of just had to come along with me. And I'm making it sound worse than it actually was. I was obviously somewhat cognizant of those issues. But I think it took me a while to kind of process that. So when you're thinking about people, you know, for other people, you know, who are maybe we're helping leaders, a lot of leaders on this podcast, you know, summer is a time where staff are transitioning in and out of churches. You know, we see that all the time, right? It's a time where people are coming in. What are some of those things as we're leading our people? Maybe we'll start there. Okay. You know, how we could help them through that transition.
Yeah. So I think, you know, as we're leading our teams, the two most important things are how you're onboarding and offboarding someone. Mm. And I actually think that, and this is a sad thing, this is not a negative thing. This is just a place for us to grow as the global church. Mm-hmm. I don't think we onboard people super well. Oh, right.
Interesting. Yeah.
And so a lot of times people show up for work and we hand them a computer and a desk and we're like, awesome, do your ministry. And for the next like 30 days, they're shell-shocked. They're like, what am I supposed to do? Right. Who are these people? What is this culture? Mm-hmm. Like, where are the landmines? I don't even know. And we don't set people up to win. And so, you know, there's a few things that I think we can do to really help people onboard well. First off, we've all heard this, and you know, William Vanderbloom and Carrie Newhoff, everybody else, all the smart guys talk about this all the time. Mm. Hiring and firing is the most expensive thing that you do. And if you don't hire well, you're going to end up hiring again. Mm. And so take our time on hiring the right people.
Yep.
Think about character, competency, and chemistry. Mm-hmm. Are they going to fit? Do they match who we are? Do they fit the values? Mm-hmm. Can they adapt to the values if they don't? Mm-hmm. Do they have the skill set to do the job, or are they just a good buddy?
Right.
And if they're just a buddy and they don't have the skill set, you're going to end up hiring somebody else later.
Right.
And you'll probably lose your buddy because you had to fire him.
Right.
So, which is terrible.
Yeah, it's
and
so terrible.
So let's make sure that we hire well. And then once we hire somebody, let's onboard them really well. Mm-hmm. What are the resources they need to read and listen to and watch before day one of the job? Mm-hmm. When they get there on day one, have we given them a worksheet that has all of their past? All of the expectations, like just prepared them well to take the next step in what they're doing, you know? And the better we do that, the better it is. Then when we're transitioning, go ahead.
Yeah, what I was going to say, on that, and I just want to underline that for folks, what you're saying here, I have found so important, so critical, the onboarding process, so critical. We found, so at Liquid Church, we were a fast-growing church, ended up being one of the fastest-growing churches in the country, and I was under the naive impression that let's just keep growing, and people will love the fact that there's more staff, and we'll keep dumping staff into this thing, and we don't have to work on those initial, you know, situations. And so what we did, what we came to eventually because of the pain of these first days, like we, you know, there were stories of people, literally the story you talked about, you know, happened to us where people would say, you know, after they've been working for us few months, they're like, you know what my first day was like? I showed up and there was no place for me to sit. There was no computer. I didn't know what to do. I showed up and the receptionist was like, oh yeah, somebody told me you're working starting today. Like terrible, right? So we do not want to do that. And so what I found really helpful was two things. One is to plan out their first week almost hour by hour. So arrive at the office, tell them, don't, because people will come too early on the first day. Say, hey, you don't need to get here till 10 a.m. That allows us to get our world together. Show up at 10. This is where you're going to show up. Plan who's going to take them out for lunch the first day. Plan who's going to take them out for lunch the second day. You know, schedule out, like, here's, you're going to meet with the finance people this day, or you're going to meet with, you know, these, you're going to have these three conversations. And then you're going to, you know, if you're bringing on a youth person, like, say, hey, we've already got it planned ahead of time that, like, here are five small group leaders in the youth ministry. They're going to come on Tuesday after, you know, at 5 o'clock, and you take them out for dinner, and here's, here's petty cash for you to go. The practicality of just here of like, here's this, your schedule for the first week is hugely important. And then the other piece is like a first 90 days goals, where it's like, hey, what do we actually want you to do in these first 90 days? Like, what is, and some of that is actually lowering people's expectations. Like, my joke, I would always say to people, I'm like, listen, this first week, all I need you to do is find the bathroom. If you know where the bathroom is, and show up for church on Sunday, and particularly if they're moving from a distance, it's like, and still be married by the end of the week. Those things are really most important, because it's okay for you to blow off a little bit early today. It's okay for you to do that, because I know it's, you know, this transition can be painful. So sorry, I interrupted you there, but what else should we be thinking about?
That's exactly right. Like, give them the hour by hour, and then put people intentionally into their pathway along that process that they're going to need to work with and do life with and experience. And then culture, like, sit down and explain to them our values and how they look and what they feel like. And you know, their time with HR needs to be as inspirational as it is perspirational, you know, like, no one loves that meeting with the HR person, even though they get a credit card and a key, they do not love that meeting. So let's make that fun, you know, like, you know, think about your culture and how do you make everything in your world feel important. Mm-hmm. And when you make that person feel important, because we all know the old saying, you only get one chance to make a first impression.
That's true.
Right. So your first, what's my first impression of my first experience at this job? Mm-hmm. I sit in a closet in a chair with no desk, with no computer and a pencil, and I don't even know what to do. And so let's set them up to thrive. Let's give them the best first week experience. And if there's some downtime, hey, here's two books that our staff has read recently.
Yep.
Just take an hour and read a little bit of this. And you know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's actually like super helpful.
That's helpful. Or even on that too, another thing, a lot of churches are, you know, they're recording their messages, and typically what happens, what I found is as you're interviewing people, people might be listening to the messages to keep track because they want to be able to kind of throw in the nice, like, well, I was listening to pastor from the weekend, but then that tends to, in the flurry of transition, that tends to get kind of go by the wayside. And so even in that first week, to say, hey, can you take an hour every day and listen to the last five messages at our church? Because that will get you up to speed on kind of what the conversation is we're having, you know, on a Sunday.
And on top of that, when I was at Crosspoint, we would do a vision series every year. And so we would always have new employees listen to the last year's vision series before they ever showed up for day one.
Right. Yeah, that's
great. And Jenny Catron is a mutual friend of ours.
Yep.
She's amazing at, she even built a course called Culture Shock that, like, you would go to take these classes before you joined the staff so that you were a little bit up to speed before you ever even got there.
Right.
You know? And so, I just think that's super important. Then, unfortunately, we also have to let people go sometimes. Right.
Yep.
And that sucks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're letting somebody go, most of the time they're going to be surprised, because if they were self-aware, they would have fixed the problem in the first place. Mm-hmm. So no, even though you've written them up before and you have a paper trail and you've had multiple conversations, the day you let them go, they're like, what? I thought I was doing okay.
Right.
And you're like, no, remember when you got written up, and remember that performance plan that you didn't complete? And those are all signs you didn't do well.
Yep.
You know, and then as a leader, you have to kind of think through, who are they connected to and how's it going to affect the rest of the organization? Mm-hmm. What's our communication plan to the organization? Mm-hmm. Who needs to know what and when? Mm-hmm. It's usually not our story to tell. It's their story to tell. So we're going to be fully truthful, but full of love.
Yes.
In the conversations that we have around that. Mm-hmm. We're never going to meet with them alone. We're always going to have somebody else there to remove any potential he said, she said kind of conversations. We're documenting everything. We're going to give them as much as we can on the way out to help them make their next transition. One thing that I loved that Crosspoint was really passionate about was We would even extend counseling sessions to them post their employment for them and their family to just process what happened.
Yep.
You know, because we do want people to leave well and be happy.
Yeah, that's good.
So those are just a couple little things.
Yeah, and I know on the letting people go, it's unfortunately kind of the cost of leading an organization. It becomes a part of what you do. If you've never done that, you're probably avoiding something. Like, there probably is people in your organization that you do need to let go, and so how do you process them through that? And yeah, to underline a couple things you said on that, I found some best practices. One, when you're thinking about the financial side, so usually there's a certain number of weeks that they're due, either legally, check your local laws, all that kind of stuff. But you need to far exceed that, and part of that, there's two sides of that. One is there's their own, it's actually helping them, the functional, I want to help them, transition into the next thing. And then there's the kind of our side of the equation. If anyone, particularly if any leaders or donors ever really lean in on us and say, what happened there? We want to be able to say at baseline, we want to be able to say with great confidence, listen, we did everything we could financially to make this transition as easy as possible. We went out of our way. And then obviously if tight leaders, the benchmark that's in my head or has been in my head when I've done those in the past is I want to give them enough resource that actually I think maybe a donor may get mad and say, you are being way too generous there. I've done that over the years where it's like, you are trying to be generous to folks. And then ultimately you say, well, yeah, maybe we're legally expected to go one X. I think we should go two or three X. We need to figure out what that looks like to go out of our way for sure. And there's a thing, on the documentation side, what have you found or what have you done or been a part of, has seen that process work well to kind of, document the process before you get there? Because you talked about that and you kind of not blew over that, but talked about that cursory.
Yeah.
What does that typically look like, you think is best practice for us?
No question. So every time I have a hard conversation with a team member, mm-hmm. and I'm a relational leader, Rich. So mm-hmm. for me, like I build families more than I build teams.
Right.
And so, those conversations are even more difficult for me because it's hard to fire your daughter.
Right.
So when I have those conversations, anytime I have a corrective conversation, mm-hmm. I'll do it orally first.
Yep.
And then I'll immediately send them an email recapping what we said and asking them to reply that this is clear and expectations are understood.
Yep.
Okay. So that's the first tier, right? And mm-hmm. then once we see that that's not working, then I will sit down and create an employee improvement plan mm-hmm. where I'm like, hey, things don't seem to be going the way we both want them to go. So mm-hmm. here's clear markers and milestones. I need you to accomplish this by this mm-hmm. for this. Mm-hmm. And we're going to meet every 30 days to check in on how you're doing. And maybe we do a 30-day plan. Maybe we do a 60, 90, whatever depending mm-hmm. on the level of leadership and what the project is. Mm-hmm. And then when we get to the end of that, we're able to identify, did this person improve or not?
Yep.
And that goes in the file as well.
Yep.
When you go to the final meeting should not be long.
Right.
It should not be emotional. Mm-hmm. You should bring all of that documentation so that you mm-hmm. can point to any questions. And I always go into that meeting and say, hey, listen, we both know this is an awkward moment. So here's exactly what's going to happen. And then I'm going to explain to you what's happening next.
Yep.
Things aren't working out, so I'm going to have to let you go. I'm going to take care of you on the way out. Here's what I plan. Mm-hmm. Here are the clear next steps. This is when your last day is. This is when you can pick up your stuff. Mm-hmm. This is how we plan to communicate this to everyone so that you know that we're going to take care of you on the way out.
Yep.
And then once again, here is what we're giving you as you leave. So mm-hmm. I hit that twice because I want them to know I'm honoring them and I'm thanking them for the years and time or months or days or weeks or minutes that they've put into the organization.
Right. Yeah.
And then letting them move on. And then the other part that I think we miss this opportunity a lot of times mm-hmm. is I go back and say, these are some of the values of our organization. Mm-hmm. And here's where we didn't meet those values. Mm. And our values are usually looked at as like culture building.
Yep.
But they can all they're also strong enough and the infrastructure of them is usually built well enough mm-hmm. that you can actually point back to how someone has not met the cultural values
right.
that has caused you to need to make this decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, and you know, just to underline that there, I think you you don't ever want to end up in a situation where people will always be surprised. They'll always be that like, oh my goodness, what is happening right now? Because there's it's a very free, it feels like, oh my goodness, everything underneath of me is eroding quickly. So that will happen. You don't want to go in, particularly to that last conversation. Unfortunately, I've heard of managers that have basically, they'll have a 45-minute conversation and then say, and therefore I'm letting you go today. That's not what you want to do. You want to do the opposite. You want to say, let's get the bad news out as quickly as possible at the front end of the conversation. So then you have lots of time for that person to process, and you're generally I have found, you know, by 20, 30 minutes into that, generally, even when it's like they're, you know, when it's quite negative, you know, people will get to a point where they are, okay, they're resolved. Yes, you're right. We've talked about this lots. I understand. But don't do the, like, we're going to go over a big long history again and then have this huge punchline right at the end. You got to start with that news and then work backwards from there.
And Rich, I have the worst firing story ever.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. First off, I'm friends with this guy now. Like, yep. Our relationship did end up staying intact by the grace of God. Mm-hmm. I started to fire him on Thursday, mm-hmm. didn't get it done by the time the meeting ended. We were off on Friday and Saturday. I had to have another meeting with him on Monday to finish firing him.
Oh my goodness.
I will tell you right now, all of our listeners, no one has probably had to take 5 days to fire someone before. And so I am the ultimate failure of this. So the lessons that I'm talking about today are lessons I've learned the hard way.
Right.
But beyond just transitioning people out, sometimes we find ourselves wondering, is it time to transition?
Yeah, why don't we talk about that?
You know, and so a couple things that I think that in my life, through way too many transitions over the course of my life, probably, I have found a little checklist of when is it time to transition, and then what are the rules of those transitions.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Let's hear about that.
Time to transition is when I wake up in the morning for more than 5 days in a row, consecutive days in a row, no longer excited about what I'm doing. That's the first like red flag for me.
Yep.
When I'm starting to do things that would have previously been non-negotiables for me.
Right.
When I get into my spot of meditation or prayer or clarity, and I pause and think, 5 years from now, what do I really want to be doing? What do I feel God's calling it on my life for 5 years from now? Is the Andy Stanley book that's amazing, Principle of the Pathway. Am I on the pathway to get to that place?
Right.
If I'm not, I need to address it, because that's not my boss's fault. That's my fault.
Right.
Okay. What matters most that makes me tick? Like, am I, like, you know, and then that's going to change over the course of our lives. When I was a 23-year-old guy versus now I'm 29 again for a couple times over. Things are different now. You know, I have 4 kids. I have a wife. I've matured. Things that used to make me tick don't make me tick anymore. And things that I never thought would make me tick, make me tick. What are the kind of people I want to be around? What's the culture that I want to be around? Where do I want to live? Where do I want my kids to grow up? What fulfills me? What lifestyle elements are making my life enjoyable? And if I could do anything without the fear of failing, what would it be?
Right.
And when I start to feel like, am I in that season of transition? I go to that list. And a lot of times that talks me out of it. And then occasionally it's talked me into it.
Right. Interesting. You know, that's good.
And then the rules of transition, which are much more difficult. Once you've made the decision, you got to remember that it's never easy and that God's not surprised. Okay. And a lot of times I think for me, that's God's not surprised has been one of the most developed processes for how my faith has grown. Because when I remember he's not surprised, I also remember that he's got me along the way.
Right. Right. Very good.
Every transition needs to be processed. So give yourself the grace to process it. It's going to take some time when you take a new job. So don't expect to hit home runs in the first week.
Right.
Mostly because you're sitting in the closet that we talked about earlier.
Right.
Be brave, but flexible. You know, like you're part of the ultimate chemistry experiment in this season. So be brave with what you believe, but be flexible to adapt to where you're at.
Right. Okay, good.
remember that you're never going to capture the what you had is not going to be the same as what you have now.
Right.
So you might capture new magic, but you're never going to recapture the old magic.
Oh, that's good.
Don't put that pressure on the new organization or on yourself. And then, you know, I think the last one is to be kind to yourself along the way. And usually for Jackie and I, when we know it's time to make a transition, we're both on the same page about it. And because there's been seasons of our life where I'm like, I'm done with this job. I'm out of here. Yeah. She's like, we're not done with this job. We're not out of here. Right. And then there's been times that she's come home and said, you're done with this job. You're out of here. And I'm like, no, it's not that time. But when you both are feeling that at the same time, God's probably up to something.
Right.
And then you for in our life, God has started opening doors as doors are closing.
Okay. Interesting.
And I know that doesn't always happen for everyone.
Right.
But that's something in my life that, you know, and the cornerstone verse for transition for me has always been Hebrews 11:8, you know, that God called him in Abraham and, he knew not where he was going, you know, and he just had to trust that God was taking him to
right,
where
he was
going.
Was taking the next step. Interesting. Yeah, I know I've joked, and it's not really a joke, but I've joked that, the voice of God and the voice of my wife sound very similar. And
the tone is very clear,
there's a resonance there. And, you know, part of that's a joke, but it's true. You know, at the end of the day, there is a, you know, piece of that puzzle that, you know, working this out in community with your spouse is a critical piece of, you know, what it means to do life together. And it's important. And sometimes, you know, our spouses see the situation clearer than we see it.
There's no question. Jackie is by far the rudder of our family. Like she sees it, feels it, hears it way before I do.
Well, let's talk about it, because you've supervised people, and there are folks that are listening in today that are either supervising or are, you know, work for someone else. And I've over the years, I've had probably half a dozen folks come to me and say, and I've never done this because I just don't know how to do this. They've said, you should talk about how you think that what the standards are for people leaving a church are. Like, so if you're a staff member, and so I've tried to be open with the people who work for me and say, listen, I know at some point you're going to leave. Like, this is most likely not where you're going to retire. Like, let's just be honest on that. And that's not, I hope you do retire here, and we're going to do everything we can to keep this and to make it the most amazing thing ever. But I anticipate at some point you probably will move on. And so then we've tried to talk through, you know, what does that look like? What would you say to folks who are listening in? Because I think there can be this fear that if I even talk about that, or if I talk about, like, I'm, you know, because there's that mode where you're, like you talked about, you know, I don't hire people, I build families. And, you know, it's like, well, if I go to dad and say, or mom and say, I'm not sure I want to be in the family anymore. Like, are you, you know, there is a fear I think a lot of people have in churches that they're like, the person on the other end is going to say, all right, pack up your desk, you're out today.
Right.
And that creates a functional problem. And, you know, my concern with that has always been, I'm not as a leader. If that's what people think of me, then I don't think that's an effective place for me to be. It's people are operating out of some sort of fear rather than out of faith. Then also, how should you approach that? Or what would those conversations look like? What would you kind of counsel people who might be asking that question?
Yeah. So I think I want to approach that from both sides of the seat. Okay.
Yep.
So let's take it from the leadership level first. Okay. Yep. You need to be secure enough as a leader to believe that you're building the best culture for somebody. Mm-hmm. And if their time is up there, that your job is to help them be their best. So when we put people over projects or positions, my number one goal is that the team that I lead is living their best life. Mm-hmm. And so if their best life can no longer be lived inside of the organization, they should not be afraid to come and tell me that. Mm-hmm. In fact, I want to be the person that they feel the most comfortable having that conversation with, knowing that I'm going to counsel them, maybe adjust for them, because a lot of times it's just minor adjustments inside the organization that can reinvigorate that fire.
Yep.
Or help them move on to their next thing and not run them out the door. And so when we care about our people and healthy cultures with secure leaders, you care more about the people than anything else. So you're going to lead them through that transition. Mm-hmm. And so I've the first thing is I've always told my teams, what we have here, I think, is special. Mm-hmm. I think we're doing something unique. But if you ever feel like God's moving you into something else, I never want you to be afraid to talk to me about it.
Right.
And Rick Warren sat down with us one time sorry, that was a name drop. Let me
pick that off the floor.
I didn't mean that to come out the way it did. But I was at this creative leadership thing, and he mm-hmm. came in and talked to us. Mm-hmm. And he said something that was absolutely brilliant, and it changed how I looked at the transitions completely. Mm. He said, God calls some people to Saddleback and he calls some people through Saddleback. Mm. And my job as a leader is to deposit everything I can deposit into somebody.
Oh, that's good.
In the season that I'm responsible to steward them. Mm-hmm. And then when they're no longer my day-to-day stewardship responsibility, that doesn't mean they're no longer my responsibility. Mm-hmm. I'm going to continue to walk it out with them.
Yep.
Okay.
That's very good.
So that's the first side. The second side is, you know, if your boss, and if you know, if you and your boss have the relationship to have that conversation, mm-hmm. and so if you do, be courageous and have the conversation. If you don't feel like you do, then you're probably destined to leave anyway. Mm. And so at that point, you probably need to start.
That's a good
looking
point.
At your next. You need to start looking for your next, because you do not have the type of, you're not in a type of culture that allows you to be fully who you are. Hmm.
That's a good point. You know, just even the fact that you're hesitating having the conversation, it should be maybe not a red flag, but an orange flag. You know, that's saying, hey, is there maybe something here that's not working for me? Is this the culture I want to be a part of long term? I know for me, I've appreciated over the years when staff have flagged that for me, and you know, a lot of times it comes down to practical stuff, or there's things we can change about their role. You know, where they're like, hey, I just don't, you know, there's this portion of what I'm doing that I want to do something different. I want to grow or whatever. And if we can accommodate those things, then great. Right. Perfect. That's a good, it's become a positive yep. experience. If we can't, then we're able to have an honest conversation and figure out where we go from, you know, from here. Well, this has been great. Stephen, I really appreciate this conversation. Is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up? We've kind of come to the end of our time.
I just, you know, I pray that as our friends who are listening today are learning to navigate transitions and living in the throes of their transitions, that they remember that God's not surprised.
Mm, that's good.
You know, he knows where you're at. He knows what your next is, even though you can't see it. And this is an ultimate step of faith and trust. And the more that you trust, the better. And don't let other people's reaction to your departure impact your belief in who they really are. Mm. Most of the time we work for really, really good people. Mm-hmm. Don't let the hurt version of a good person be the last version you remember.
Mm. Oh, that's very good. Stephen, I really appreciate you being on the show today. If people want to get in touch with you or connect, I know you've got a website, you do coaching, all that kind of stuff. How can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, best two ways is through my website, stephenbrewster.me, StephenBrewster.me. Or you can just find me on Instagram, B_REWSTER.
Great. Thanks so much. Appreciate you being here today, Stephen.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me, Rich. This is awesome.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com, and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch, or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.